Rocio, and I am first-generation Dominican.
Hi, I'm Mercedes, and I was born in Santo Domingo, Dominican Republic.
And we are
Amplifying the Afro in Afro-Dominican!
Hey, Rocio.
Hey, Mercedes, what's up?
Oh, nothing. How are you today?
I'm okay.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How are you feeling?
I'm feeling pretty good. Because guess what?
What?
Remember when we spoke to Indira and Violet from My Wellness Solutions?
Yes.
That had that great conversation and stuff?
Yeah, they were awesome. Well, shout out to them. Shout out to Indira and Violet. We love you.
We love you. And our episode sort of relates today. It's a continuation on health. I mean, you know, we're here, so we're on topic still. But anyway, the point is that I got motivated and went to their center and I got a colonic.
Oh my gosh. How was it?
It was very
interesting. Oh my God,
interesting.
I want
to know. It was a really interesting experience.
Please share.
I'll share to the world about my butt experience.
Putting something up your butt.
Putting something up my butt. But for health reasons, though. It wasn't an alien probe. It was to clean out my colon.
Okay.
And it was a really interesting, it's definitely not comfortable. I'm not going to like sugarcoat it and be like, it's fine, it's fine, it's fine. It was not comfortable. I will say though, as I was quote unquote releasing, I could feel myself feeling just lighter and lighter and better and better. But frankly, and you know, I don't want to gross out our listeners, but like I was straight up pooping for 35 minutes straight, basically.
Whoa.
Yeah. Cleaning out that colon.
Wow.
Are you excited to do it?
I don't know. I'm scared.
Of course you're scared.
So you feel better? Like, you know, how was it going to the center? Cause like I'm dying to go.
Oh man, the center was beautiful. It was absolutely gorge. I went to the one in Harlem.
Okay.
And I absolutely loved it. And it was very clean. Everyone wore their mask. They, you know, all the appointments are set up so there's not many too many people in the waiting room. I will be doing a colonic every what is it, 4 to 6 months was the suggestion, and I'm totally gonna do it because it's seriously. I think it's more disgusting to know that that stuff was inside my body.
So you got to see like the stuff that's in there.
Yeah, I saw it. You could see it come out
real time.
In real time.
So and what, it's like did they tell you like, "Oh, like how that's kind of intimate." That's very intimate.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Shout out to Julie.
My therapist and I are going to be best friends, obviously.
Oh.
She was fantastic, very gentle with me, very easy with me, especially that it was my first time and was fantastic. I mean, you know, just talking to me about the ropes and yes, she was like, oh, you ate some carrots and there's some nuts. And this is stuff like 2-3 days, stuff that I ate days ago. And let me tell you, I go regularly. Like I have a good, you know, digestive system, but the fact that there's still stuff from days ago in.
I hope no one's having their breakfast right now.
Yeah. Anyway, I recommend it because I think it's more gross to keep that stuff inside your body than getting it out, in my personal opinion.
Well, that's really cool, Rosie. I'm really proud of you.
I'm proud of me, too. That shit was scary. I ain't going to lie.
You did it.
Yeah, I took charge. I did it.
Look at you.
Yeah, I'm really happy about it.
Well, I can't wait to hear more. And you're motivating me to think about going. In getting it done.
You're going to go. You're going to go next week. We talked about it.
Maybe. Speaking of advocacy.
Yes.
And taking charge of our health.
Yes.
We have an amazing guest today.
Yeah, we sure do have an amazing guest today.
Yeah.
Should we tell our listeners about her?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Of course. Who do we have, Rocio?
We have Eileen Z. Fuentes.
I am so excited to have her on. Like, I've been following her forever. I love her.
I know. You've been talking about her for a minute.
Yes.
Let's talk about her.
Okay. So, listeners, you're in for a treat. Eileen is a health educator, community health activist, and a full-time clinical coordinator for breast and gynecologic oncology. She was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2008 and since then has become a fierce advocate for all patients with a focus on the most vulnerable. For 6 years, she led a free bilingual wellness program for patients in collaboration with the Herbert Irving Cancer Center at Columbia University Medical Center, where she now works, addressing disparities in cancer care using communication and patient education strategies that are culturally appropriate.
Appointed by the Manhattan Borough President, she has served on the Community Education Council, where she led the Health and Wellness Committee. She was recently selected as a community advocate specifically to provide the perspective and lived experience of Latinx and other underrepresented patient populations for the SWOG Cancer Research Network, which is dedicated to improving the practice of medicine and to enhance the quality of life for cancer patients. Guess what? Last year, the United States Dominican Council recognized Eileen for her advocacy efforts, and she recently completed her graduate degree in health education at Teachers College.
Whoa. And she has three daughters.
She has three daughters.
And she's married.
And she survived cancer.
Like, I can't wait to talk to her.
And she works. And she's an activist. And she's this. This is just proving more and more every time we talk to more and more Dominicans. How amazing we are
out in these streets.
We just be working, caring, man. You know, we just be killing it out here.
Well, let's get her on. Yeah, I can't wait to talk to her.
Excited to talk to her. Let's get her on. Let's jump in.
So we basically have different topics. The way we have this podcast is, you know, we combine, we interview Dominican people, but, you know, with different topics. And so we do, we both wanted to make sure that we had healthcare and we had health and wellness as one of our topics, because that's such an issue and an important issue in our community. Yeah. And so I'm really grateful that you're here with us, and I'm so glad that you were available to share this space with us.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm happy to talk about it. I wish the whole world was as interested as you are, because there's a lot to unpack there. So let's go.
All right, let's do it.
Just tell us about yourself.
Okay, so a lot of people think my story starts at cancer, but that didn't happen until 12 years ago. So really, I'm somebody that was born and raised in Washington Heights. I was raised on the white side of Washington Heights, which is what I call Washington Whites. They're predominantly Orthodox Jewish, and so I get made fun of by my husband and his friends, because they say I have no street cred because I was born and raised on Bennett Avenue. And so when I was about 10 years old, I left Bennett to Minnesota, St. Paul, Minnesota, because my father worked for Ford, a motor company. And the plant closed, and I lived in Minnesota for 3.5 years. And that's really, if we're talking about being Dominican, that's when I found that I was Dominican, because everybody was really like me. I went to school predominantly with, you know, Dominicans. And so I went to Minnesota, and it was like I was transported from my life to, like, I loved the movie Grease growing up, not realizing all the hidden messages in it. And I was thrown into that world, you know, and I was like, and I was super excited about it, because I was like, wow, I live, you know, where there's like a football team and cheerleaders and everybody's blonde and blue eyed. That's what they look like on my, on the screen when I watch that movie. And it was awful. It was awful. And that's when I really found out I was Black and that I was Dominican. But it was strange, because Black Americans didn't really see me as such. And white Americans didn't see me, you know, so there were Mexicans there. There was a large indigenous population, and I didn't fit into any of those brackets. And so that was really, it was strange to navigate the world that way. And then I came back and I came back to Washington Heights. I ended up moving to Jersey, finishing high school there. And then as soon as I finished, I came back. I was like, I don't live in any of these worlds. I don't want to live in those worlds. And I came back to Washington Heights.
Yeah.
And then I ended up having my daughters and And then, you know, that was, my oldest daughter is 21. So,
wow.
So, yeah. So my oldest daughter is 21. I have three daughters. And then I ended up getting sick along the way. And that's where, you know, people usually know where my story starts. So when my health and, you know, I sort of say when I went from being somebody with good health to being with somebody with bad health, and then all the activism started, and I sort of put everything together with all the racism that I experienced my whole life living in these white spaces, and then combine that with actually losing my health and seeing the disparities that exist in healthcare, it all sort of came together. And sort of that's really, you know, that's kind of my story in a nutshell. But professionally, I was diagnosed with breast cancer at 34 years old. That was 12 years ago. And sort of somebody who worked in the hospital system, realizing that I was there, I used to oversee HR for the largest department there. I kind of was busy, wow, like a lot of people are, a lot of women.
Yeah.
And what ended up happening is that I started to realize that not all of us had access to the same things.
Yeah.
I spoke English. I had private insurance. Mm-hmm. I knew how to navigate the healthcare system because I was part of it. And then I realized right then and there that there were a bunch of people sitting right in the same institution that didn't have the same privileges that I had. And then it sort of fueled my activism in the way that I had to translate. I had to figure out like the food, and we're going to get into all that. But it really was like, if I have this information, I would be doing a disservice to my people that I'm so grateful for if I didn't share it. And so, you know, that's really where it is. And I haven't stopped yelling and screaming since.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
Yes. What a journey.
Thank you. Yes. It was a long and complicated journey, but here we are.
Yeah. And I love that you saw the disparity and then like got activated. Because some people do that and they're just like, oh, I'm just so grateful I'm not like that. And they just keep moving on with their lives. But you decided to take action, which is so amazing. You know, that takes strength in itself as well, I think.
Yeah, no, for sure. And this is not for everyone, right? It's hard to be in the world of cancer where, you know, I don't want to just summarize it to say it's cancer. No, cancer is losing both of my breasts, having them both reconstructed, 6 months of chemotherapy, losing all my hair, my eyebrows, my eyelashes.
Wow.
You know, my ability to work for 10 months, like all of that. And then to decide to come back in. It's not because I'm stronger than anyone else, because I feel that these women that I'm actually speaking, sort of representing in all the spaces that I enter, I feel like they have so much on their plate already. And so do I, but I have the privilege of all the things that I already listed. Yeah. So that if I'm able to communicate it in a certain way, or I have the education to be able to walk into primarily white and male spaces and convey this information, that I feel that it is sort of my life assignment to do that. Yeah. And by doing that, you know, I'm honoring all the women that I've encountered along the way.
Absolutely.
So I'm taking their stories. If they have two jobs, single moms, and having the experience of cancer, they don't have the same flexibility. I'm already in the hospital. So it's easy for me. Yeah. You know, I'm already there. And if I'm there and I kind of know these people already, have established relationships with them, I can still have that conversation.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Oh, and I read a quote somewhere that said that privilege is responsibility, right? So it's like, absolutely, we have the privilege, we have that responsibility to pass it on, take care of our people, you know, and I love that you call yourself a self-care activist. Can we talk a little bit more about that and some of the disparities that you found?
So it's funny because I've wrestled a lot with that word in the full term. And this was actually a term that was sort of given to me by somebody that I was working with to do my website. And they were like, you're a self-healthcare activist. Mm. And I was like, I get it. What, you know, because I used to say a lot, it's one thing for the doctors to give you a prescription for what you need to do when you're in the hospital setting, but what happens when you're out of it? And so that's where we tap into our roots and all of the things that we grew up with, our ethnicity, who we are as Dominicans. And so she was like, you're a self-healthcare activist. And I was like, I get that. But then it started to resonate with me a lot because I feel that a lot of the work that we do as activists, as healthcare, you know, professionals is rooted really in community and collectivism as opposed to individualism. And when you use the word self, it conveys a very individualistic sort of, I'm embodying that term, and it's starting to resonate with me a lot less. Because everything I do is rooted in community.
Yeah.
And collectivism, not in, you know, I eat a certain way and so now I'm healthy and you died of cancer and I did not because I did this. Mm-hmm. I don't see it that way. I would never be here if I did it all by myself.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
And so, you know, and it's funny because they say what you most need to learn, you teach, right? And self-care is not something that I've sort of forced it into my life in ways that I cannot control. For instance, I moved so that I can be able to walk to work. I moved so that I could have an access to a park nearby so that I have to go and use it and exercise and move my body in a certain way. And I have access to my ethnic, you know, foods that I grew up eating and stuff like that. But they're sort of embedded in my life in a certain way that I can't control, because otherwise I wouldn't even do any of this self-care stuff.
Yeah.
Because I'm so busy. I just finished graduate school. I work full time. I have 3 kids. I'm a wife. I'm always out there involved in community things. Yeah. And so self-care is something that I struggle with so much.
Yeah.
Like a lot of women.
Yeah.
We say it, but we don't necessarily do it. And so I realize that when I walk to and from work, that's a half an hour. That's how I've heard some of the podcasts that you've already done in the past. Mm-hmm. When you guys invited me, I was like, I have to hear these things. And so walking to and from work is how I have self-care.
Yeah.
Because I'm listening, I'm learning. I love learning specifically about, you know, me and my people. So that's what I did. Look out in the street. I'm getting, you know, I'm seeing the same faces every day. So for me, that's my self-care. I say that's my spirituality. That's my church when I walk to and from work.
Yeah.
And I don't see work as work. I see it as a life assignment. So that's self-care, because I feel like, you know, there's all these statistics about when you volunteer and what that does to you as a person, that it's good for your health. Mm-hmm. And so, so when you're doing these things, it's like self-care that's sort of very subtle. It's very nuanced. It's not like I'm going to do my nails and I'm getting a massage today. Like, yeah, that happens from time to time, but not enough as it should. Yeah. And so in some ways I'm hypocritical because I don't do those things as much as I should. But I also do. I also recognize that I do them in certain ways. The way I feed my body, that's self-care.
Yeah, I need
to honor my grandmother, my great-grandmother, in the way that I eat my food, without having to change the way I am or what media is telling me I should eat. Like, your food is bad. Our food is good. You know, our white food is better than yours. No, that's not true. And so for me, that's self-care. The way I feed my family, the way I walk to work, the way what I'm listening to, that it empowers me.
Yeah.
So those are ways that I do. But I'm really struggling with that word self.
Yeah.
And I have to figure out a way to get rid of right. it, because I realize that self is really deeply rooted in so many other people that's not actually a right term anymore.
And also, you know, like for women of color, right? We are, you know, this whole stigma about the strong Black woman, or, you know, how many of us, we're so nurturing that we forget about ourselves, right? So I think it's so important to have self-care and to be an activist for ourselves and our health, because we'll do it for everybody else. But for ourselves, sometimes, you know, that's really challenging. And so I think it's so important to talk about that, because, you know, let's talk about cancer. Let's talk about that. And, you know, so many of our people are getting sick, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, women, we are the anchors of our family.
Exactly.
Is it the anchor or the men? You know, like the one that, like,
I think it's the women are the anchors. Like, yeah, I agree,
you know,
with,
like,
you.
We are the ones that hold shit down.
Yeah.
You know, like, hold with shit our kids, down, for sure. With everything.
Yep.
And so we'll put ourselves at the back, you know, at the end.
Well, I think that's what I love, what you said. It's not individualism, it's community, because if we just
and
this is, of course, things that we've learned, message, like bad programming and bad messaging, I think, that we've also gotten, like, because I see myself still taking care of everybody else, but not myself.
Yes.
But I could not, I could be a part of the community that I'm trying to build, you know, and get involved in, like, hey, partner, let's try to both eat this way and collectively as a community cook together or do this together, as opposed to me just taking care of that person or these people. So I really love what you said about that, that it's about building that community too, you know?
Yeah. And I feel that that's where I'm lacking. I pull the people that I love the most in to hold me accountable. So I take these really ugly looking, like, selfies after I do, like, the stair drills here in Washington Heights. I'm like full of sweat. I look disgusting, but we send each other pictures every day.
Yeah,
so my brother's into fitness. My good friend Carolina's into fitness. And so we send each other pictures, and they're hideous pictures, but it, you know, where's your picture today? And also the fact that I have three daughters, what am I telling them?
Yeah.
What am I showing them? It's not what say as I say, I mean, do as I say, it's do it what, in what you're seeing me do.
Yeah.
And it's crazy because I never saw my mom rest. And so therefore I never rested. I never saw my grandmother rest. So not, so now it's like, I see my daughters, they're like putting lavender baths and they're doing all these things because they've already seen it in the home. Yeah. And so it's super important that we, you know, we break those cycles of just doing so much damage to ourselves by trying to do too much.
Yeah.
There's a breaking point, and cancer was that for me. Yeah. You know, had that not happened, I would have continued on that same path. But I feel that the more you abuse the body, it manifests itself in different ways. It doesn't have to look like cancer, but it manifests itself in another way.
Oh, yeah. Mm. I hear that. I hear that.
Yeah. And I mean, going into you did this dope TED talk that I checked out, and you talk about, which I wrote a quote here about, the study that was done for the patient activation system, where it said that patients who were more active in their own care tended to be better in their health more than, you know, so their socioeconomic peers, regardless of income. And correct. So it goes into what you're saying, like, this is why it's so important to take charge of our health.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I will say this. So in academia, you know, I just finished my graduate degree in health education. You know, there's the people that are in these positions of power. They don't know the nuance. I would also add to that study, if I were the one leading that study, I would also talk about the importance of cultural relevance, which was something that was really important in the wellness program that I led for 6 years. So if I brought an acupuncturist, it was a Black and brown acupuncturist.
Oh,
if I brought in, you know, somebody to teach a class from Alvin Ailey, which I did, it was Dominican girls teaching merengue, bachata, and salsa, right? Like, so those things were deeply rooted. And so you don't, what I feel like in the health space, what happens is that we're often being told, don't be who you are, don't eat what you like. And so it was important for me to bring a chef that is from South America to prepare a meal. And it was important for me to bring people that, so you, we're dancing, eating, you know, we like flavorful food, but we're being told eat kale, do yoga, but the yoga's not being told by the people who created it. And it's like, it's all these mixed messages. And I think, like, yes, when you're activated as a patient, it's super important to also not change who that person is. Because when they tell you don't eat what you like, they're telling you don't be who you are.
Yeah.
And so it's so important that patients are activated, but it's also a reintroduction to who you are.
Yeah.
And in the wellness and in the holistic space, constantly we're being told, you didn't invent this. This is something that is ours, not yours, which is not true. Black and brown people created these modalities. And so it's a reintroduction to who you are. What did your great grandmother eat? What did your grandmother eat? What kind of herbs grew in the spaces that she grew up? So these are all things that we started. And so it's just reminding you of that. And once you're reminded, intuitively, we know these things. It's in our pathology, right? And so it's just saying, here it is again. Welcome back home. And now that's why they do better, right? They do better because they're like, wait a minute, I forgot. I was so busy working and eating cup of noodle soup and figuring out what to do with such little time and money that I forgot who I was along the way. And so I can tell you, like, you know, the science just proves what we already know, right? So I know from working in you know, cancer world for 5 years professionally, but 11 years as an advocate, that people who were surrounded with caregivers and doing certain things that we did growing up or maybe how we would have done them on the island, they just do better. I was seeing it with my own eyes.
Yeah.
So this study just proved what I already knew.
Yeah.
And so that, and it was missing the piece about cultural relevance, which is so important. And so, yeah, I would say, like, yes, patients, and now there's science to back up what I'm saying. When patients are activated, they do better. But also when they are presented with something that doesn't seem like it's totally foreign. Like if I were to throw you into Indonesia and say, act and be like those people, then you would be totally lost. You wouldn't know how to talk. You wouldn't know how to eat. You wouldn't know how to move your body. And so it's the same thing. When I'm showing them rice and beans and greens and roots and spices and dance the way you already know how to dance and rest the way you know how to rest. Like we were people that worked in farms. So we ate really heavy in the day and then at night we ate something light. And so it's just reminding you of those things. A lot of the things were plant-based. When we did eat meat, we only ate small portions of it. And so again, this is not so far out of, you know, then there's the extremes, like you must be vegan, plant-based, you must have these, you know, these whatever, wheatgrass shots. And this is how I started my journey with, you know, healing my own body. But that ultimately evolved into how I live my life now without giving up who I am.
Yeah. That's a great point because, you know, like growing up, you know, you grow up, you take things for granted. Like, you know, you grow up with your family. Most of us, you know, with like if we're fortunate with our grandmothers or just the influence of the food, you know, and you take it for granted because, you know, we have our yame. We have our healthy starches that we just like, oh, whatever. You know, we have our asopaos and, you know, our grandparents lived to be how old? Granted, they didn't live here, but, you know, the culture of the food of what you're talking about. Then we're here and then we want to be Americanized and we start this Americanized diet, right? Yeah. These trends that don't really go with our makeup. Dr. Sabi talks about that too. Our cell electric foods, going back to the foods that our ancestors ate, because that's what really, you know, heals us. But we disconnect so far from it, then we get sick, and it's like doing the work to get back in connection, which is just like, you know, it just everything in life is just coming back full circle and going back to getting to know who you are, and the foods really do help connect us to our roots.
Yeah. It really does.
Yeah, no, and it's like funny because it, like even when I was talking to my mom once about, you know, beans and how long it takes to soak them in overnight and then the next day, you know, and all these things. And it's like, why are you trying to do all these things that take so long when we got to this country so we can, you know, do things a little faster and a little less tedious? But really, like, it's so funny how my grandfather came here in the 60s. To, you know, in search of a better life or because, you know, to avoid political persecution and all these other things. But then now we're trying to do what they were running away from because now we have all this privilege and all this knowledge. And now I'm like, my life would be perfect if I could live on a small farm in Dominican Republic and lead off the land, right?
It's
exactly what they had.
Right.
They had to leave it all behind. And it's funny when you say full circle, I think about like, you know, I don't know if you could see in the back, there's like my vision board, there's pictures of my grandmother and stuff like that. These are things that are like, I wish I could go back to what they left. Yes. And it's funny, we're going full circle. And again, with our privilege, we can have a little bit of this and a little bit of that.
Yeah,
right. And, totally. And that would be for me, the perfect medium.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
How do you, because you work in the healthcare system and you understand it better than most within our communities that have lack of that knowledge or lack of that resource, is there advice you would give them now of like what they could do to do what you're advocating for to, because, you know, let's say someone makes 20 grand a year and has like really shitty insurance or, you know, and they're just trying to be healthy. What would you tell them to be, to, you know, be on the right track?
So first of all, it's knowing how to even convey the message because there's a lot of blaming that happens. You know, ustedes quieren comer así or, oh, you know, ustedes tienen que dejar eso. Like that's how it's you know, from these people I see online, that's how they say it. So first of all, is being gentle with the person.
Yeah.
Reminding them when I was in school, it's funny because we had to eat off of like what WIC pays patients to, or people, not patients, but people how to eat. With $50 for 2 weeks, I had to eat with them.
Wow.
And so I was the only one, you know, I went to Columbia and those are students that are very privileged. And so they had no idea what to do, but I knew exactly what to do. I knew how I could go to dance down the street. I was able to get things like watercress that cost a dollar. I was able to buy 6 plátanos for a dollar. Like I was good.
Right? Yeah.
You know? you know, because I knew exactly what to do. Right. And this is how I grew up.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, it's really easy because I say like, I can create a shopping list for them. I can show them pictures. I literally do this in my job.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's saying like, this is how you meal prep. You make this much amount of rice, this much amount of beans and rice, plátanos, greens are all cheap foods.
Yeah.
Where it starts to get expensive is in the meats, the fish. Those things start to get more expensive as you start adding on things like organic or grass-fed, it gets more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
But the good thing about things like healthy oils and all those other things is that they're more expensive. So you consume less of it, which is actually a good thing, right?
Yeah.
So we don't buy the big tank of mazola. We buy a small thing of olive oil you know, cold pressed olive oil is going to cost you like almost $20. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's about, so let's figure out where you're at and let's make a budget from there. Without, again, over, I don't get tired of saying without giving up who you are. Because yes. You can still eat rice, beans, and greens, and platanos, and yuca, and all these other things that we have for a pretty cheap amount of money.
Yeah.
For a little bit of money. Now, if you know, with insurance, so if you have like shitty insurance, and most people that I work with do, the good thing about shitty insurance, at least in New York, because there's people that have Medicaid or that should be eligible for Medicaid in places like Florida, and they are not because their government doesn't provide it. But here in New York, we have some leverage. And so when you have something like Medicaid, you don't really have out-of-pocket costs. Mm-hmm. And so even your shitty insurance will get you care, at least at a place like Columbia Presbyterian where I work, but maybe not a, you know, private, you know, place like Memorial Sloan Kettering. Mm-hmm. So you can still move within the hospital, you know, institution barriers that are there to prevent people that have less than to get into those places. But once you're there and I'm in front of you, I'm going to tell you in Spanish, again, what you should eat. Here's your budget. Here's what I did with 2 weeks. And so let's work together to figure out what are the hours that you can cook, who can watch your kids, how can you involve the kids in that yeah. process, because you're teaching them as you're doing. So there's a lot, you know, and so it's really about not diminishing who the person is. It's just educating them, but honoring that they are also so full of wisdom. Like yeah. my affirmation every day, I come to work and I say, let me be the student today. So I know that I'm going in there and I'm going to be the one learning.
Yeah.
Knowing that I'm no better than them. They probably know way more than me, especially if they came here from another country. And so I'm also learning. Yeah. And trust me when I tell you, I learn more than I teach sometimes. Yeah. So you know, that's sort of what leads the way that I work with people.
Wow, what were some changes that you made in your life, which you already started talking about? Like, I want our listeners to really learn more about the importance of taking charge of our health. But like, in reference to like exercise and food and the connection with illness.
So for me, like I said, in the very beginning, it was like I lived in a world of extremes. Yeah. I was growing my own wheatgrass. I was juicing it. I started, I had like a little bit of like of a sort of a deck at that time. I lived in New Jersey. So I had like, I grew kale, I grew radish, I grew cucumbers. And this is actually spearheaded by my daughter, who must have been like 9 or 10 years old. I put her in a little farming program and it was free, and she did it, and we started growing, and sort of that's sort of how it started. But it was a world of extremes. Like right. I was a raw vegan for a while, and I was sprouting all my stuff, and it was just a very, you know, hard, regimented, almost joyless life, because that's all that I lived to do.
Yeah.
Over time it evolved. And also it was funny because my mother-in-law moved in when I went through that year of cancer treatment. She's an old school Dominican lady that knows so much, but knows very little about sprouting and all this weird things that I was doing at the time. Mm-hmm. So she started cooking like all the traditional things, like sancocho with the meat. Like it wasn't like vegan sancocho, it was like the way she knows how to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And at the time, my body temperature was below 98.6 all the time. So I'd be sitting there shivering. I had lost 40 pounds during cancer treatment. I was sick, eating probably, you know, what people tell you is the most healthy for cancer treatment. And finally, I just didn't have the strength to keep up with it. And I just let her sort of drive the car and do what she wanted. And immediately my temperature went up, my body started getting stronger. And I was like, okay, that was a teaching moment for me. And I said, okay, now this is what I'm going to do. So what do? I eat whole grain rice. I soak my beans. I go to the farmer's market all the time. I get, you know, everything. And I have a large family. So, you know, it's my husband and my 3 daughters. And so I get enough food that, you know, and I get like the healthy oils, the grass-fed meats, and I consume less of it. And I really eat within a short period of time. So I do something that has a ton of science that's emerging from it, called intermittent fasting, specifically for cancer prevention. I just eat within a short window of hours. And then when I make my family dinner, I pack it up and I take it to work the next
day.
So in there I have, you know, I have whatever it is, my rice, my beans, my greens, and a little bit of meat sometimes. And then on top of that, I have papaya, pineapples, organic blueberries. I eat a lot. Even though I eat in a, like in a certain amount of time. I drink a lot of water. Yeah. I go to bed. I have ginger tea with turmeric. Like those are the ways that I eat. And it's normal to me. I'm not starving myself. I on the weekends, I eat with the family. And that means whatever they're eating, I'm eating.
Yeah.
There's no limitation. So I don't have any specific label when it comes to food. Mm-hmm. I eat whatever. And God forbid I'm in DR. I'm going to eat like a vacuum cleaner. Because I'm going to eat everything in my path because I feel that that food is handled very much differently than it is here.
Right.
And so I want to have that. And I feel like my ancestors are like in my soul when I'm eating that food. So that's what I do. So basically I eat within a certain amount of hours. I have a whole lot of plants and then all the process and the junk, and I eat junky things too. I love chocolate. It's not always the super dark chocolate. Sometimes it's the cheap one, the Hershey's Kiss or something, but I try to instill joy in the things that I do. I don't like to live like a robot, like I did in the very beginning, but at the same time, I'm not reckless either. Right. There's like a happy medium for me.
That's awesome. That's really awesome. Well, before we get to closing out questions or starting to wrap up, I do want to talk about the disparities in breast cancer when it comes to the Latino Latinx community. And what are there some preventative measures as African heritage, you know, Caribbean heritage people to prevent, like preventative measures we could take?
Instead of calling it preventative, I like to call it risk reducing, right? Because I think a lot of us are perfect citizens.
Yeah.
We eat a certain way. We may do all the right things, and something like cancer could still enter our lives in some way or another.
Yeah.
And so in order to reduce your risk, I think that there's five things that you can do. There's the way we move our bodies, being very intentional about it. And again, like it doesn't have to be like turning on a tape now that we're in this COVID thing that where we can't go to the gym. It doesn't have to look like going to a gym. It could be walking. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and in New York City, it's kind of easy to walk. Yeah. You know, your listeners can come from anywhere, but walking is easy. Doing it in the daytime because not everyone lives in a safe neighborhood. But it's important to work up a sweat if you could. I mean, some of us, I mean, I think we all have natural hair right here. So it doesn't matter. But you tell my mom to work up a sweat, she's like, I'm not messing up my hair.
Yeah.
So it's important that, you know, we remember that. So try to move our bodies in a certain way. That's one. The flavoring of our food has to be something that's super important. I've said it, but the spices and all the things that we know what they are, and always being mindful about adding dark leafy greens into our plates, even if it's to have a salad before and then eating all the things that you want to eat so that you're getting them in first. Mm-hmm. So that, but there's a specific subset of vegetables that are called cruciferous vegetables that are cancer, what we call anti-cancer, right? So these things actually can have a big part in you reducing your cancer risk, whether you've had it or whether you are trying to reduce the risk of having it. Mm-hmm. So those are important things that I always tell my patients and anyone who's looking for that. Rest. Rest is like my grandmother used to call rest medicine. And that's so important. Like I grew up with that in my mind, and I would always put my kids down for naps in the middle of the day. And people were like, why are your kids always sleeping? And I'm like, because that's medicine. Like siesta is a big part of what we do, and we can't do it in this country, but we can find ways to step away, especially those of us that have the privilege of working from home.
Yeah.
Like step away and being able to just either open the window and take a breath of fresh air, doing a 5-minute meditation, doing something so you're stepping out in the middle of the day, and then establish routines around bedtime that doesn't involve you being in front of a screen. Like I said, you have tea, you read a good book. Like at a certain time, you have to tell your body it's time to rest. So the same way you wake up and you brush your teeth and you wash your face and you don't really remember that you did that, is the same way that it should work on the opposite end for sleep. Yeah. So having a whole routine around sleep so that your body is signaled that it's time for bed. Mm-hmm. And so rest is the part that, you know, I think it's super duper important. And then there's sabiduría, which is like collectivism, what I was saying, as I struggle with the word self, that I'm trying to like separate myself from it. Because there's so many things in our own communities, you know, with gentrification and all of this other stuff. People don't like, I grew up in Washington Heights. I still, because I live only a few blocks from where I actually grew up, I still see people that I knew from my old building that, you know, there's a guy that I see that my grandmother used to babysit, and he's like a 40 something year old man, you know, with his own kids. But this is something that we grew up being like a community, and now we don't have that. And so figuring out, even if it's your circle of friends, but still being able to cultivate that and continue that tradition, because that is literally who we are.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like when you used to sit in La Galeria in Santo Domingo, whatever, where we were out, you were very much part of your neighbors, and your neighbors will tell your mom, yo, I saw her doing this with some guy or whatever. Like, I want people to tell me what they see my kids doing. I want to be able to look at somebody else and be like, listen, if your mom is not home, you could come here and eat. Like, that's so important. And we've moved away from that. And then also having a spiritual practice. And by that, I don't mean a religious one. You know, botanicas and all these indigenous practices and all the santeria and all these things like that are rooted in herbalism and all that. This is, again, this is medicine. Medicine so much so that it could work contra, well, that's what they call contraindicative for chemo drugs, right? And so they'll tell you, you can't have that because that is actually building up your immune system so much that your body will reject the chemotherapy. But when you're not actually undergoing chemotherapy, what a beautiful thing that you can use these things to heal your body on a very deep level. Like all these roots and herbs and teas and tinctures and things that you rub on your skin, like those things are important. And we, you know, you don't have to go get like a whole certification in that. Just talk to the elders, right? People, these are some of the loneliest people in our community that don't have anyone to talk to. And if you find someone from wherever it is that you are, they don't have to be Dominican, but somebody that can understand, it could be a West Indian person. It could be a person from Central and South America, a Mexican person. Talk to them about what they used for healing. And then you try to incorporate those things. Because we have to honor not just our ancestors, but theirs. So there's so much healing in those five things, right? So rest, sweat and movement, eating in a certain way, spirituality, not religious. And what was the other one? Collectivism and community.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow, that's, those are good.
I'm about to change my life right now.
Not too much.
You know, baby steps.
Or subtle, or you know, like I say, in baby steps. You know, when you pack it all in, people are like, tell me what you did, you know?
Yeah.
Like, well, it took me, you know, here, it's been 12 years and my whole lifetime to get to this point.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. Yeah.
What about, really quickly, I just want to talk real quick about you becoming a dual citizen and DR. How was that process? And, how was it participating in your first election? Or I don't know if it was your first Dominican election.
So, yes, it was my first election. Of my very first proud election, because it as this country was going down, our country was going up in terms of progressive issues being brought to the forefront. And so I was super proud to cast my first vote in that election. But yeah, being a dual citizen. So the part that, you know, I did a graphic that I sat there for hours, and so many people have asked me, so many of my friends have done it since I've done it, that I was like, okay, let me put it in a graphic. What I left out is, you know, Dominicanisms.
Yes.
We're a hard group of people to figure out, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of unprofessional things that happen along the way that I chose to leave out of the graphic. But, you know, when I'm speaking to my sisters who know how complicated we are, it is hard.
Yeah.
You know, it is hard because one day the rule is that there is no rules. So you have to be really committed to doing this because it will take your soul and to break it into a million pieces. Because one day you go in and they're like, you know, and I have, you know, because I go online and I get up, made an appointment, and they don't even care about that. They're like, we don't care. Get to the back of the line.
Yeah. You know?
And I've been honored by the Dominican consulate. So I pulled out the Facebook thing. Like, look, I was honored by the Dominican consulate for my activism. And they're like, okay, whatever. That's not even you. Go to the back. And I'm like, all right, whatever. So those are the part, you know, I say that disclaimer, but ultimately I had no time attached to it. It started in March of 2017. I did it as a birthday gift. I went with my mother to myself. I went with my mother, my husband, my mother-in-law, and all four of us went to the consulate to initiate the process in response to the Trump presidency. So when he was elected, I said, I need leverage. I cannot be associated. This man is not who I am. And so I need leverage. And it was a beautiful thing because there was no time attached to it. I was like, this is going to take as long as it takes. I don't have to do it for any specific reason. And then it took a really long time. So it took a long time for me to actually get it, but it's because I kept like not wanting to take days off of work. And so I let it drag out for a couple months. When I did it for my daughters from beginning to end, it literally took like 4 months. So it doesn't even take that long. So once me and my husband had it, then I then requested it for my daughters. And now that they all have it, now I'm in the process of changing it because it goes by your birth certificate. So I have my status as single and my last name is not Fuentes. It's my maiden name, last name De La Cruz. So now I'm in the process of changing it. And then when all five of us have it, now we're going to request passports. So again, just go knowing that time is not a big, you know, issue for you because it's going to get delayed. There's going to be things that are inconsistent. But ultimately, what I want to do there is buy any small little bit of property with access to land so that I could have my food and I could have my country and I can contribute not just to somebody as, you know, I'm here from New York, but also as somebody who lives there part time and contributes to, you know, more progressive issues because our issues are big issues. You know, healthcare is you know, their abortion is a big issue there. And all these old Catholic ruling patriarchal issues that are there. Like, I want to be able to participate and dismantle those things the same way I do it here.
Yep. Yeah. That's awesome. Wow. That's really great. I do too. I'm hyped. You're inspired.
I hope you guys do it. I really hope you guys do it. Like, you know, people are like, can I Venmo you money? I'm like, don't give me money. Trust me, I need it, but I don't want it. Yeah, just do it and change it. Let's break the system. Yeah,
like, let's break the system. It. I love it.
Yes.
So we didn't ask you, how do you identify?
So how do I identify? Okay. I identify as Black, with a capital B. yes, because it's not just the color, and other ethnic groups, you know, whatever it is, that's capitalized. And so it's Black with a capital B. Mm-hmm. I identify as a Latina because I speak the language and I embody some of the cultural things that Latinas have. I identify as a mother because I am a mother to three amazing girls that I, you know, are little activists in their own interests. And then I think I also am a healer because I work alongside conventional healers, but I bring, you know, the wisdom of my people, to that. And I actually, you know, over 70% of the patients that we serve are immigrants. And so I'm a healer, but I'm also a student because I'm a learner and I'm an eternal student. So always open to learn other things. So that's a lot of labels, but I could keep going, but I'll leave it at those.
Thank you. So what are your three favorite things about Dominican culture?
All right. So obviously it's food. Right. Food is my favorite thing in the whole world and not just Dominican food, but I think our food is the best. I think loyalty. I think we're super, super, super loyal and sometimes to our own detriment when we talk about self-care because we're so loyal to not just our families, but the extended community in a way that could sabotage ourselves. But ultimately, it comes from a beautiful place. And so loyalty is something that I think is very, 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 very I don't know. It's just something beautiful about Dominicanness and Dominican people. And then our work ethic. I think our work ethic is also impeccable. I think, you know, all I see is women working really, really hard and being part of the community. Like we really held this country up during the pandemic. I'm somebody that, you know, I have the ability to work from home, but I go to work 4 times a week. I'm there with people that are in active cancer treatment. I don't have the ability to stay home. I cannot do that from home. And our work ethic, even patients that are undergoing cancer care, like I'm talking about the home health aides, the maintenance ladies, you know, the women who work in salons, like they go and they are undergoing chemotherapy and then go to work and then come and cook meals for their families. Our work ethic is impeccable. And so, but it's also a beautiful thing, right? Yeah. Because we work so hard and we lift each other up so much that I mean, I love being Dominican because of those two things.
that's
beautiful.
Awesome.
Yeah. So our final question, how do you amplify the Afro in Afro-Dominican?
I think simply by existing. The way I move through the world, I am a Black woman that, you know, is Dominican. And so where I work is a space where it's predominantly white men. Sometimes white women. Every now and then you have like an maybe a Asian woman in the room, but I'm the only me. And I'm usually the only non-physician, right? Wow. So I'm in a room where I have, you know, less education, more melanin, bigger hair. I don't ever straighten my hair. And I do that on purpose. I go to job interviews with my hair like this, right? And so simply by existing and just being who I truly am, if I have to say, like, if I have to make an excuse because I'm not available, I don't. I say the truth. And so I try to carry that truth wherever I go. And a huge part of that is because I'm a, you know, my friend Ada says that Africa is the grandmother land and DR is the motherland. And I was like, that's beautiful. And I take those two places with me wherever I go. Yeah. You know, we all talk a little more educated when we're around things, but I don't, like, people say, like, oh my God, you know, like all the white people, they're like, oh my God, you talk like Alicia Keys, or you look like Alicia Keys, or whatever. And I'm like, well, whatever, however you want to label it, or whatever you want to say, I don't even think I look like Alicia Keys, but that's the only point of reference, because I'm not really, really black, and I'm not really, really white. So so that's the only point of reference they have. And so whatever, I, you know, for them, I talk New York, right? You know, and I have a position, a national position, where I represent Latinx patients around the nation.
Yeah.
So I go to Mexico, I go to Chicago, I go all these places, and I never change who I am.
Yeah.
And I'm the only person that looks like me. And so by existing, that's it. That's just by existing and being my true self. Yeah. I don't need to do anything. I don't have to, like, you know, wear a t-shirt or go to protest. I've been doing that my whole life.
Yeah,
I do those things. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But by existing, and then when they'll say, like, why do you keep saying you're black? And I'm like, well, I will say I'm not African-American because I'm, you know, I'm not, I'm Dominican.
Yeah.
But I'm a black woman. And so, you know, this is what we look like.
Yeah, this is what we look like.
Yes. Yes. I can talk to you for hours. Like, I'm so inspired. You're an example of turning poison into medicine.
Yeah, totally.
For real. Yeah. I'm so inspired. And I think it's great for, you know, listeners. It can be a listener out there who's going through something very similar. And this is, you know, years later, the effect of it, of the journey, you know, because sometimes whatever it is, not just cancer, but anything that hits us, we're going to have obstacles. And it's about confronting them and then using them as fuel to turn them into something positive. And so I think you're a great example of that.
Yeah. And I love what you said about being a student constantly. I remind myself of that as well. It's like, I'm here to learn. I'm here. Like, one of the privileges of this podcast is we're learning stuff so every week. And getting more inspired every week. And I love what you said is that, you know, forever student, forever taking in like a sponge. And I also totally am taking in what you said and how things can manifest in different ways. Cause like I'm having some health issues right now. I personally think it's just been, you know, lack of work and just like the stress, the everyday stresses in this society. A capitalist society manifesting in my body, and just like being aware of that and knowing that's probably what it is and how to take care of myself and get through it. So,
yeah.
Well, I will say this, the lack of health, even a temporary one is not necessarily our fault. We just have to recognize what the signs are, which is what you did. But I think it being the day after a Black Caribbean woman is now vice president, I think with the weight of the world is a little lighter. She's not a perfect candidate. She was not my top, right?
Yeah.
And certainly Biden was not. Yeah. But I feel that I slept deeper last night.
Yeah,
I feel
so
my
true.
Heaviness.
Yeah.
So I have to honor that. You know, again, it's the story and what it looks like. You know, a Black Caribbean woman.
Yeah.
I slept good last night.
Yeah, for real.
Maybe it's because I had too much like alcohol to celebrate. But I've done that for other reasons, and I didn't wake up the same way. So today I feel good.
I also appreciate how accessible you are. I will say I did IIN thanks to you. Integrative nutrition online course for our listeners who don't know. And I had questions and I would just like message you and you would be like, you remember you sent me this whole email about how amazing the program was. And I appreciate that. And I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us because, you know, people get busy and it's like, you know, we are community and we have to remember that we need each other and we have to support each other. And you do that. So I'm so grateful for you.
Yeah, thank you.
I feel that we are here in abundance. The more of us that there are out there doing this work, the better we are. This is not a competition. This is a force. And if I could ever help, especially a Dominican woman, like, Yeah. Say no more, right? I'm here. I'm accessible. Whatever you need, as long. And if I'm not able to do it, give me a minute. I'm going to get back to you. You know,
that's, like, right.
That's how I am. Because I know it comes back. Look at how we're sitting here today.
Yeah. Never, yeah, yeah.
You know, who knew?
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So how can our listeners find you?
So I, you know, I've been terrible with my website, but
I love your website.
Thank you. It hasn't been active. It hasn't been active in all the years that I was in graduate school, which is 2.5. So I appreciate you looking at it more than I do. Mm-hmm. So Aileen Z Fuentes is, you know, my Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. I don't really talk too much on Twitter because all my professional colleagues are on there and all my activism stuff doesn't, that's not the space for it. Because yeah. Yeah. I'm an angry person. So those are the places that I am, that where I'm at, but I'm also working on creating a whole online program to teach people to do what I do. And so I'm in the process of learning how to do that now. And hopefully one day I'll have a podcast like you, where I could talk to people about healing and cancer.
That would be dope.
Yeah, no, I would love that. And so, you know, I'm trying to figure out all this technology stuff. Cause at the end of the day, you know, that's another, you know, I can do the food stuff, but the technology stuff is a little difficult for me.
Yeah.
That's what I want to do. And that's how I can be found.
Awesome.
Keep us posted.
Absolutely. I will do that. And it has been such an honor. Like I said, you can talk to me, but I'm a talker and I can talk to you all day. This is also medicine.
This is like heaven for me.
This is awesome.
Yeah.
This is collectivism, community work. You know, this is beautiful. Thank you. Thank you. And you're both amazing.
You too.
Have a great Sunday.
You too.
Enjoy it.
Thank you. Bye. Adios. Besos.
Bye.
I love her.
Yeah, man. Aren't we lucky to get Aileen Fuentes here?
Yes. I don't know how she does it.
Yeah, how does she do? She's so busy. That's what I was just going to say.
Oh, my goodness. She really is. I mean, I don't even know, pioneer is the word, but
yeah.
Is she?
Yeah, I think so.
Is that the word?
I think she's a pioneer.
Yeah,
like she's creating these new ways and spaces for people to build community and take care of themselves.
And I love what she gave us those 5 tips on like healing and stuff, like sleep and, you know, the importance of spirituality and just, you know, connecting back to our roots and our culture.
Exactly. So everyone, if you like this episode, please, please, please tell us about it. We're super accessible. You could go to rocioandmercedes@gmail.com. You could DM us on IG, rocioandmercedes. You could hit us up on Twitter, R&M Podcast. What else? Oh, we got a website, rocioandmercedes.com. Hit us up. Tell us what you think. We're really responsive. We love it, love it, love it when listeners hit us up and comment, make suggestions, anything. We love it. So please keep doing it. And if you haven't been doing it, please start. We would love to hear from you.
Yeah. And what are some of the things that you do to take care of yourself?
Yeah.
Let us know.
All right. We'll see you next week.
I'm going to go soak my beans.
Okay. I'm going to go soak myself. Okay. Bye, everyone.